This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony's the president of the Family Research Council. It's such a pleasure to be here with you again. I'm a 30-year media veteran, investigative journalist, consultant, and producer of this very program. I grew up in Kansas City, but now live right here in Oxford, Mississippi, down in the South. Well, on today's show, President Donald Trump gave his first speech to the United Nations this morning. He harshly criticized North Korea, and once again, he called North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, you ready? Rocket Man. Rocket Man. And we'll talk with Dr. James Carafano. He is with the Heritage Foundation's organization. He's the Vice President of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies. He'll be here with us here in just a moment. And House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, well, she got a dose of her own medicine at a press conference Sunday. She got chanted down by amnesty advocates. And we'll talk with Jim Simpson. He's an investigative journalist with the Center for Security Policy and author of The Red-Green Axis, Refugees, Immigration, and the Agenda to Erase America. And Hillary continues to push on the blame game. Leadership expert, president of CDR Assessment Group, Nancy Parsons. She'll give us her take on Hillary Clinton's obsession with losing. And then, hey, are you a sports fan? I know I'm a huge sports fan, like college football. I cheer on my Kansas City Chiefs. Well, are you tired of politics and sports? Do you just want to watch your favorite team without a player pushing his or her agenda? Well, Burgess Owens, member of the NFL Super Bowl champion Oakland Raiders team, will be here to sort out that topic, and we're going to take your calls. Well, as we mentioned, President Trump delivered his maiden address to the United Nations earlier today. Foreign policy dominated the message, called out rogue regimes. And joining us now is Dr. James Carafano, Heritage Foundation's Vice President of Foreign Defense Policy Studies. James, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, good to be with you.
Well, has Rocket Man left the building?
I don't know, but the Elton John song just keeps playing in my head. Look, that was just classic Trump, but in many ways, this really works. I mean, in a sense, kind of humiliating Kim is a very good, it just demonstrates the seriousness of how we take this threat. And I think it actually does put them on notice in a way that more diplomatic speech would not, because they do this all the time. And they feel like they pay no price for that. So this is so humiliating for him. And even the first thing they're going to be terrified is does anybody in North Korea actually hear this? Because if they hear people, other leaders of the world, making fun of the dear leader, that's a real threat to them. So I do think it kind of puts them on notice. And, you know, what's important people understand is what's going on here. We are, you know, people listen to the media, they must think we're on the verge of World War III. It's like, you know, things are bad, they're going to get worse, they're going to get worse. But we're not on a linear path. This can only go so far. If you think of war as kind of the top rung of the ladder, there's all kinds of rungs missing there. I mean, North Korea only has nuclear weapons to preserve the regime. As soon as a war starts, the regime disappears. So they're incredibly unlikely to do the one thing they know that destroys the thing that is most dear to them, which is to hold on to power.
Well, Jay, you know, North Korea vacated its seat as soon as President Trump started speaking. And matter of fact, I've got a clip here. Let's just hear a little bit of what he had to say.
Major portions of the world are in conflict, and some, in fact, are going to hell. But the powerful people in this room, under the guidance and auspices of the United Nations, can solve many of these vicious and complex problems. No one has shown more contempt for other nations and for the well-being of their own people than the depraved regime in North Korea. It is responsible for the starvation deaths of millions of North Koreans and for the imprisonment, torture, killing, and oppression of countless more. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary.
Well, there's that Rocket Man again, James. And, you know, he was a master at this on the campaign trail of coming up with nicknames, and he almost turned him into a caricature, didn't he?
Yeah, and you know what's unbelievable, because I've been kind of monitoring the press corps, is on the left, there are people that are attacking the president for exactly those comments and saying, the United States has ceded the moral high ground because we look like the aggressor. Now, what normal human being on the planet Earth could listen to that litany of absolutely true criticisms of North Korea and hear the president say very clearly, if we are attacked, we will defend ourselves, and then turn around and say, it's the president that's acting like the aggressor here, and the United States has ceded the moral high ground. I mean, that's absolutely Orwellian.
Yeah, and I think the average citizen is out there applauding, and they're talking about this. This is what people are talking about, and they're pushing it out there, and they're cheering. And you know, he really put his best effort forward. I think a lot of folks are believing, and he even called the United Nations to task, saying that the U.S. roughly pays 20% of the U.N. budget. How do you think they're receiving that?
Well, I thought what he said was exactly right. The reason why there's been peace since the end of World War II and there's an international order is not because of some yahoos in some building. It's because of the states that work to fight and defend that. And these international institutions are there to serve us. And the president basically said, look, if you're out there and you're not solving the problems, if you're not solving our problem.
And we talked about China, and it seems like China wants its cake and eat it too, doesn't it?
Right. And, you know, what's very important, I think was missed in the speech, because people focus on what he said about North Korea or this or that and everything else. And what's much more important is fundamentally the challenge the president laid out in the speech, which is, you know, you have a bunch of people in the U.N. that said, look, just turn the world over to us and we'll tell everybody what to do. And we know that's not going to work. And the alternative worldview is actually one that's expressed by countries like Russia and China, which is right is might. Whatever we say and whatever we do goes, and we define what normal is. And what President Trump did is he identified a clear third path. He said, look, the bureaucrats are never going to solve your problem. If you let these yahoos run wild, they're going to make strong, and they need to stand up for themselves. And I think that's exactly the right message.
And he also took aim at Iran and Venezuela in particular. He attacked the nations such as Russia and China, although he didn't really mention them by name, for trading with North Korea, even as it brings the world to, the brink of nuclear war.
Right, and for interfering in the Ukraine and trying to block freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. The president has always said, look, he doesn't use Reagan's words. He doesn't talk about China and Russia as the evil empire because, in a sense, they're not a global threat to all of us. But he has been very, very clear. He says, look, you are messing with people's lives. Stop what you're doing. If you stop what you're doing, you know, we will leave you alone. You can leave us alone. And so he consistently offers China and Russia an off-ramp because, you know, we don't need to be fighting with them. But what they have to stop doing is impinging on our interest and impinging on the interests of our friends and allies, making life miserable for people in Europe, in some places in the Middle East, in parts of Asia. And so he's chosen not to call them out by name, but look, if you look at U.S. policy and what other U.S. officials have said, it's very clearly we have put the Chinese and the Russians on notice.
And how do you think his critics are going to respond and to what?
Critically?
We
live in a hyper-partisan world, and I read the criticisms of the speech, and it's the speech that they're hearing in their head, not the one they read on paper. Actually, what I do is I don't listen to the speech. I read it, and I looked at it objectively, right? And mm-hmm. What's happening, though, is those criticisms are such a departure from reality. What they are doing is they are not whipping up a resistance, right? They are not bringing down this president. They are balkanizing themselves into a little circle where they yell at themselves and they talk to themselves. But they're largely, I believe, alienating themselves from Americans and actually alienating themselves from some of our allies.
And you know, some of the strategies I've heard that could be possibly used with North Korea in particular is, you know, you mentioned at the top of the show about people inside the country, if they knew this or heard about this. Well, that could be a strategy, though, if some of that could get to the citizens and creating an uprising within the nation.
I mean, I think that's possible. I mean, that's also problematic because, you know, North Korea would be, obviously, if things spun out of control, a massive humanitarian disaster. I think the building blocks of our strategy are there, and they're clear, and they really were laid out by the president. Look, we're gonna use our nuclear deterrence to its full effect. If somebody attacks us, they're gone. But having said that, we're also building missile defenses, so they might try to attack us, but they're never going to be able to do that successfully. And we have conventional deterrence in partnership with the South Koreans and the Japanese, so they can't threaten us in other ways. And the final piece of that is really the sanctioning piece. And why the sanctioning piece is very, very important is it's not about bringing North Korea back to the negotiating table, because they're never going to negotiate their nuclear weapons. We know that. And I doubt we actually have the capacity to prevent them from building a usable weapon. But the point is what you can do with the sanctioning is you can really prevent them from building up any kind of arsenal of any significance. So our missile defenses and nuclear deterrent will far outmatch any kind of nuclear capability they present. It doesn't end the regime, but it accomplishes what really are our two goals, which is one is there's not a war in that part of the world because that's destructive for everybody, and they're not actually able to directly attack us. We can achieve both those goals without overthrowing the regime or, you know, starting World War III. Now, you know, no foreign policy is perfect. I mean, nobody has suffered more than the North Korean people. I mean, the great tragedy of retaliating against North Korea is 99.9% of the people that die are victims of this regime.
On another note, you know, the brilliant marketing move of President Trump, which we see over and over and over again, he used in his UN speech, was repeating the term America first, you know, showing that nationalism. And I'm sure that's not going to go over well by some.
Right. But, you know, our real allies, you know, maybe not the yahoos that jump on television and stuff, but the nations that we work with, they understand that America first is not America alone. And we understand that. And the president actually said that in his speech. We have friends and allies around the world. We pull together because it's in our common interest to do so. And the irony here is as much as the unbelievable criticism you hear the president, countries are lining up to partner with the United States because they look out there and they say, what are my options, right? Am I going to be a vassal of China? Am I going to be invaded by the Russians? Am I going to be killed by ISIS and Al-Qaeda? Or am I going to align with the one person that's willing to stand up with these people? And a lot of people are making that decision, particularly in the Middle East and Europe and Asia.
You're listening to Washington Watch. We've been talking with Dr. James Garofano. James, thank you so much for being a guest on Washington Watch.
Such a privilege. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. Well, Nancy Pelosi, she's getting a dose of her own medicine. She had some folks that literally took over her press conference over the weekend. They were chanting her down. They took over the podium. I think we've seen some of this kind of activity at Republican town hall meetings across the country. We've reported those here on this very program. Well, we're going to talk about what that was like for Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and we're going to talk with Jim Simpson. He's an immigration investigative reporter and also the author of The Red-Green Axis, Refugees, Immigration, and the Agenda to Erase America, when we return.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
And you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this edition of the program. And by the way, you can find Tony on Twitter. He's at T Perkins, at T Perkins. I'm at Russ Jones and the number 60 on Twitter. And also, you can go to frc.org, all kinds of great information about the Family Research Council. You can find out information about the upcoming Values Voters Summit in October in Washington, D.C. It's an event that you don't want to miss. It's October 13th through the 15th. You can go register for that event, the Values Voters Summit in Washington, D.C. It will be top-tier speakers, newsmakers, people that you want to hear from about what's going on in the nation. Well, immigration activists confronted House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi as she tried to hold a news conference on Sunday. The protesters are upset that she is negotiating with President Trump over the DREAM Act. While investigative journalist with the Center for Security Policy and author of The Red-Green Axis, Refugees, Immigration, and the Agenda to Erase America, Jim Simpson is with us now. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Russ. Great to be with you. Thanks for asking me on.
Thanks so much. Well, before we talk, let's just take a moment and listen. You know, we heard a lot of these kind of sound bites at town hall meetings across the country with our Republican members. Let's just take a moment and listen to this clip. Go ahead.
You don't know what you're talking about. You are not helping the cause that we want to take this first stage today. Well, do you not want to listen? Why don't we do this? Since you don't want to listen, we'll have to just go. You don't want to listen.
Well, I tell you what, Jim, that is a big dose of the resistance movement in her face, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, I was just going to say, she had just recounted to the crowd details over a dinner meeting last week with President Trump and Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, where they discussed crafting an agreement that would couple the DREAM Act with unspecified plans to bolster security along the U.S.-Mexican border. And there you see what happened.
Engaging in negotiations is a reasonable thing, one would think. No.
And this
you're dealing with the left.
And this group of angry young immigrants, many of them illegal.
Illegal aliens.
Illegal aliens chanting, all of us or none of us, shut down this news conference. So so what is it? What is she dealing with here now? And isn't it interesting they're coming after their own, really?
Well, you know, it is. And if she hadn't expressed such obvious disgust and walked out, I would be tempted to say the entire thing is a setup.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what they do. Those left-wing groups, and let me tell you first, you know, I did a little bit of research on the protesters. This is a very highly organized thing with something called the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance, which is a group of about a dozen organizations, some of which have national connections. One of them is called United We Dream, and five of those of subsidiaries of United We Dream were represented among those people. They get 3.2 million a year from the AFL-CIO, from the National Immigration Law Center, and from an organization called Neo Philanthropy, which invests heavily in the open borders agenda. So we're talking a highly organized group here. They obviously had a complete agenda that was completely scripted. You know, they had the typical leader chanting, giving the Leninist chant, shouting out a question, which they all answered in unison. This is something they practiced and rehearsed. And what the left does is it gets people like that in situations like that, and they scream the most extreme stuff, you know, no borders, no wall, no negotiations, no border security, everything we want, we have to have, and we need it now. And that's their chant. And when they do that, the Democrats can then dial it back a little bit, and it sounds like they're being reasonable.
And responding to their critics.
Yes. The entire thing is unreasonable. You know, the entire issue of granting amnesty to illegal aliens, it should just even be a non-starter from the beginning.
I really have a hard time understanding how can they demand anything. You know, Jim, I travel all over the world. I've been all over the place. And when in Rome, you do as Romans, to use that analogy. My rights are very limited. And I know that when I take that passport and get on that plane, I know I'm going to a place that I'm losing my rights. And I am now dependent on the U.S. government to protect me. And I just don't understand how they can think they can demand anything.
Well, they think that and they plan for that because they have a very definite agenda and because they get shielded and covered by politicians in this country who have a vested interest in seeing that agenda carried out. And we both know I'm talking about the open borders agenda, the illegal alien amnesty agenda, the refugee resettlement. I mean, the entire purpose of all of those various components of immigration, legal and illegal, are designed to basically overwhelm, swamp our society with people from cultures that don't agree with us, that don't buy into our constitutional Republican form of government, and are going to provide political power to those who oppose that. And that, in this case, is the Democrat Party in the United States, which has become radical left.
Well, we've been talking with Jim Simpson, Jim, thanks so much for being a guest on Washington Watch. And coming up next, bitter Hillary blames Comey, Russia, WikiLeaks, Facebook, fake news, voter ID laws, sexism, misogyny for losing, you name it, everyone but herself. We'll talk with leadership expert Nancy Parsons when we return. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
And it's Tuesday. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's an honor to be with you here today. You know, we're keeping an eye on our show, but we're also keeping another eye on a massive 7.1 earthquake in Mexico. Seems like some over 40-some people have already been pronounced dead. Keeping an eye on that. Well, Hillary Clinton's blame game continues. In her new campaign memoir, What Happened, and during promotional interviews, Clinton ultimately blames FBI Director James Comey for her loss to Donald Trump instead of the many mistakes she and her campaign staff made. Well, with us now is Nancy Parsons, author of Fresh Insights to End the Glass Ceiling. She is also president of CDR Assessment Group Incorporated, a firm that provides breakthrough assessments and services for leadership and talent development. Nancy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, I'm really anxious and curious to get your take on this because you work with people on leadership issues, I presume, to help people be better leaders and to how to navigate business waters and how they come off as leaders. Tell us just a little bit about some of your thoughts about Hillary.
And again, we help leaders and executives to become more self-aware. That's the absolute key to success. And I think, with Hillary, it's twofold. I think she'd already made it past the glass ceiling when she became United States Senator from New York and Secretary of State. Now, she didn't reach the top position, but she also, with her blaming everyone, she's not taking responsibility. And that just shows some of the flaws in her leadership to begin with. Not taking responsibility even when she was Secretary of State for mistakes and so forth. So it's been a trend with her. Also, on the bright side of personality, on her strengths, she frankly is not as charismatic as many of the other leaders that we've had. So that kind of hurt her in not, you know, gaining more support. I think gender played more of a minor role. It certainly was a factor, but I don't believe it was a key factor in her losing the presidential election.
Well, you know, in the closing weeks of the campaign, Clinton continued to be unable to draw the enthusiastic crowds like Donald Trump was drawing, that had routinely, filled Trump and Bernie Sanders rallies. Both of those two were attracting lots and lots of people. What is it that you think that ultimately was not connecting with the average citizen?
Yeah, I do think it was that she doesn't have those social skills. We measure in our character assessment, our leadership character assessment, 7 primary traits or strengths to be a leader. And one is sociability, and to have high scores in that, and also interpersonal sensitivity, connecting with people. I think if I were to measure her, I do not have her data, but I'm confident she doesn't score the way many other more successful politicians and leaders do, because she lacks that ability to really connect with a lot of people.
Well, you know, on her book tour, she also said sexism played a role in her loss, and yet she can't really explain why millions of women voted for Donald Trump. And, you know, I'm fully aware there are issues of sexism and racism in our culture, but it sure seems like that those excuses are sure being thrown around a lot these days in the political space in our cultures.
Yeah, and I think that's really detrimental. What's so exciting about the research that we did, actually I had an Uber driver who clarified it for me, our research shows that there's a difference between men and women in leadership, and what's holding the women back is under stress and adversity, they tend to be worriers in greater numbers, meaning they have a fear of failure and they pull back and withdraw. Meanwhile, the men's risk under pressure, or the risks are upstager, egotist, and rule breaker. So they move against, fight, you know, they're very aggressive, over the top maybe, but they win the day. That seems more leader-like, albeit some of their behaviors aren't appropriate either. So anyway, and when you look at that, I think her risks definitely undermined her in how she was coming across and when she would, you know, how she would cope with the stress going on. I think she had, you know, several different risks that were inhibiting her. And I do believe that one of the primary things, she actually said on the Today Show, she did not make enough mistakes personally to lose the election. Yeah. That was stunning.
Yeah, a matter of fact, let's listen, Nancy, just take a second here. Let's listen to a clip. Hang on. Go ahead.
I think I stayed way too focused on a path that was not the direction that the campaign was heading because of the pressures from outside forces, because of the reality TV candidate I was running against. I think that I was not as adept or as quick to try to figure out, okay, what is a better way for me to try to communicate this?
Nancy, what can we learn from Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump? We have a lot of people listening to this show. There are people out there that are leaders wanting to be a better leader. Just briefly, what can we learn?
Well, I think we can learn, number one, self-awareness is critical, and not only on your strengths and gifts, but also it's really important to understand your risks, how you behave under adversity and conflict. And these behaviors often undermine our effectiveness. They are not an excuse for bad behavior. So the more leaders can be in touch with who they are and really make an effort to improve, and we can, like women can improve on their worrying, so they're not letting that interfere, as well as men need to tone it down on being too aggressive and too, you know, pushy or even bully-like type things.
Well, Nancy Parsons, welcome to thank you for being with us on Washington Watch. We're up against a hard break. Okay. Author of Fresh Insights to End the Glass Ceiling and president of CDR. Coming up next, we're going to talk to a Super Bowl champion from the Oakland Raiders. Are you ready? Super Bowl champion Burgess Owens. We're going to talk about politics in sports, both off the field and on the field. I am a big sports fan, and I know there's a lot of you out there, too, and you're tired of it.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Are you ready for some football? You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can follow Tony on Twitter at tperkins on Twitter. And I'm at Russ Jones in the number 60 on Twitter. Also, you can find out all kinds of great things about the Family Research Council at frc.org. Mark your calendars for the upcoming Values Voter Summit. Something you don't want to miss, folks. That's a place to go and hear what's going on in the country. And sometimes, you know, politics can get intense and things that are going on in the world can get intense. And we go to entertainment and movies and sports to get away from all of those things. And if you're a sports fan like me, you know, I grew up in Kansas City rooting for the Chiefs. Hey, the Chiefs, they're off to a great start this year. Used to be a big University of Missouri sports fan, but then they kind of had their meltdown and not so much anymore. But no doubt you've witnessed the politicization of sports, both on and off the field and in Hollywood. And certainly in Hollywood, the leftist agenda reigns. And you've seen sports players take a knee during the national anthem, like out-of-work quarterback Colin Kaepernick. And this weekend, Seahawks defensive end Michael Bennett, who is among the ranks of the NFL players to sit during the anthem, celebrated a sack on Sunday afternoon and a single raised fist, which is the salute of Black Power. That's just the beginning. All kinds of things. ESPN and their announcers and their attacks that seem to interject politics. Not seems to, but it does. And are you tired of it? I'm tired of it. And I know there's somebody else that's tired of it. With us now to discuss this disturbing trend is Burgess Owens. He was a member of the NFL Super Bowl champion Oakland Raiders, selected to the NFL All Pro Bowl, and now author of Liberalism. This is a great title. Liberalism, or How to Turn Good Men, I love this, How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps. Burgess, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to chatting with you for sure.
Well, thank you so much. Before we get going, I'm going to give the phone number out because I'd like us to field some caller questions together and get some opinions out there. The phone number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Well, Burgess, it's a great title to a book, and it sure seems like it's affecting our players in sports.
It is, and the actual content of the book comes down to a couple of things. Number one, how proud my race was as I was growing up because we were doing the right things. We were very Christian-based, very patriotic. Many of our fathers had returned from the war, and we loved our country. We filled with pride when raising the flag and singing our anthem. But at the same time, it's also a story of how the left works. They have a long game, and it's all about stealth and deceit. And what they did to the black community is only an example over the decades of what they're trying to do our country. So I think this is a very topical discussion as we now see what the left is doing to our kids. 8-year-old kids now are sitting on a knee because men do not have the manpower or the guts to stand and tell them what's right. So anyway, it's a very topical discussion, and we need to make sure we understand what we're fighting. It's not against each other. It's ideology, socialism, Marxism, and liberalism. That's our enemy.
Well, Burgess, as a New York Jets, you were first-round draft choice, NFL's 13th pick. You were selected to the NFL's all-rookie team and as the Jets' rookie of the year. And then after 7 years as a New York Jet, 3 years of defensive team captain, you were traded to the Oakland Raiders. And Burgess, you know, I grew up in Kansas City. I'm just saying the little tension there, but it's great great to have you on the program. And you know you worked hard for that, and I am concerned about what this message is giving to our young folks. Hopefully adults are adult enough to understand what it's really about, but the young kids, there's a platform here that you have that nobody else has.
Yes. And in the past, because of the generation I grew up in, I'm watching very strong black men. It was a great generation. What a lot of Americans don't realize is just how well the black community was doing before we allowed the liberal left to take its place. We, during the 40s and 50s and 60s, led our country in terms of the growth of the black middle class. We led our country in terms of men committed to marriage, men committed to higher education, the percentage of entrepreneurs. So it was a really thriving, successful community, and unfortunately, we began to allow the left, the Democrats, to put in place policies that changed everything, including, more particularly, destroying our family unit. So we have to be careful about that, and of all the things that you just mentioned about my past, I'll say one thing that I'm so excited about. I love being American. I'm proud of being an American, and I know that together, as we understand and have these conversations, we're going to pull our country back from the abyss of socialism.
Now, you were raised in the segregated Deep South community of Tallahassee, Florida. You were the third black American to be offered a football scholarship at the University of Miami. That's some history there, and you've got a place to talk about that from, don't you?
It does. And here's the thing. My success, whatever it is, and let's say one thing about success. Success is not a push it on a button and go to the top of an elevator. It's a lot of downtime. I mean, we fail more than we succeed, even though we highlight the good things. But the thing that we were taught growing up, when I left my black segregated community, it was expected. We knew that we had to go out and work hard because our family name was on the line, my race was on the line. We wanted to make sure we didn't let down either one. So the things that I look at, and by the way, those of my generation across the board, that generation that came out of the South in that time, very successful generation. We just happened to let our next generation down, but not seeing through and understanding that the real enemy was the slow stealth of liberalism that has been not showing up in our communities.
Well, Burgess, I had a feeling our phone lines are just lit up. You want to take some calls with me? Have a little
Absolutely.
Fun?
Absolutely. We'd love to. Yeah. We'd love to.
Let's go to Jane in Iowa. She doesn't see how these athletes even have a right to turn their job into a political platform. Jane, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have a question for Burgess Owen?
Yeah, I'm wondering how legally they could get away with it, truly, because I am an employer. My husband and I own a small business. If we would ever hire, fire, refuse to give raises to our employees, based on their political opinion or view, we would be in huge trouble by the government. Our employees are free to be who they are, but we are not free to judge them by it. I don't know how an athlete can use their job as a political platform and they don't get in trouble for it when we as employees would.
Well, that's a very good question, and we have to understand where this comes from, guys. There's two parts that we're dealing with. One is within the black community, there's a lack of hope, and that's after decades of black Democrats, I call them royalty black class, that's actually left them in that position where they're worse off today than they ever were. So there's a problem there. It's going to be up to black conservatives to get in there and start to do our work and change that around again, give opportunity. The other side of it is what the left does. The left, they're very stealth with using entertainment. The real culprit of this is the NFL. NFL will charge these guys for dancing in the end zone because it's detrimental to the NFL's image. And at the same time, they allow these guys to stand on the sideline, raise their fist, all that kind of stuff, because it's the agenda of the left to take away the hope of the black community. The more hope they take away, the more Democrats are voted for. That's the way it works. So if you really want to know where the real culprit is, just continue to turn off the TV when it comes to the NFL. The NFL is not our God, and if they decide they do not want to respect a country that believes in a God and believes in people for who they are, we need to turn them off and let them start feeling in their pocketbooks. So at some point,
totally
they'll recognize they're going the wrong way.
Yeah,
all right,
totally
thank
agree.
You. Thank you so much, Jane. Let's go down to let's go to David in Tennessee. He's pretty upset about all this as well. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you, sir?
Hey, this isn't Tony. This is Russ Jones filling in for Tony.
Oh,
but,
I'm sorry, Russ.
That's okay. Welcome. Do you have a question for Burgess?
Okay. I did. Well, I just had a statement, really. It sickens me that these players would do this and protest the United States of America when the United States of America is the only country in the world that gives these athletes a chance to participate in a game, make millions of dollars, live the high life. And the game, the participation is based on their skill and their God-given talent. It's not based on their race or their color or their creed or their religion or anything else. It's based on the skill they have, and they should leave the politics out of it. And I agree totally with Burgess that the NFL should put a stop to this, that they should stand and put a stop to this. This is the greatest country in the world, and everyone here can participate. But I haven't watched 5 minutes of NFL football. I wanted to watch the Giants play last night, but I did not watch it because I'm not participating in the sickening thing that these men, these grown men that have this opportunity, would protest the very country that gives them that opportunity and the flag and the national anthem.
Burgess, the other day there was a meme going around the internet, and a lot of people thought it was true. And ironically, it was Lamar Hunt Jr. from the Kansas City Chiefs, and it said on there, "This is my football team. These are my employees, and you will stand and put your hand over your heart during the Pledge of Allegiance." It wasn't true, of course, but I think there's a lot of people wishing that it were true.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate where we see ourselves, and it would never happen in the days of Al Davis and George Allen and Vince Lombardi, because our country and our men looked at our country quite differently. We have to, again, and I applaud your early caller. At the end of the day, if we have a problem with the NFL, let's just turn them off. That's how we vote, and so we have to continue to do that, and at the same time recognize within this black community, we have some issues. These people really believe that they've been put in and put under because they've been trained this way by the progressive left for decades. So that's where we have to do the heavy lifting, roll up our sleeves, go in there, and particularly black conservatives, give a different message and help these kids have hope and move forward and so we can get this thing turned back around again.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, let's go down to Kevin in Birmingham, Alabama, Burgess. Now, he's on the other side of this issue, so I'd be curious to hear what he has to say and what you have to say. He agrees with Kaepernick. Kevin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. I agree with my father, and I'm a black man of social conscience. I also played athletics and played baseball, and I'm from the Bay Area. My father was one of the inspirations behind John Carlos, Tommy Smith, and Liam is putting their fist up in the air. And one of the reasons it was to do was to make a statement without acting like an idiot and yelling. The reality is that when you're a black man and you've improved, gotten yourself to the level of where you're playing professional football or any kind of sport. By the way, the NFL to me is a plantation sport. Those owners are making $1 billion off of primarily black athletes right now, black people whose careers are short-lived, and they're making billions of dollars, and all they pursue and promote is gambling and fantasy sports and violence. And for years, they won't even look at you if you're getting injured. They just want to shuffle you out there. I don't watch the sport. I refuse to watch it. I used to play football. I will not watch it as long as there's no one standing up against the root of what's going on, and that is the mistreatment of black males and black people getting murdered by those who sworn to protect them. I've lived in this country for 400 years. I'm the descendant of slaves. My family fought in every war since the beginning of this country. And we've come back home to being killed, hung, can't sleep, eat from the same counter, drink from the same water fountain, and still in the age of 2017, people are getting murdered and guns put to their heads. And you know what? If you don't stand up for those who... Because you, by the way, Burgess, you stand on the shoulders of giants.
All right, Kevin, okay. let's let Burgess respond. Thank you.
Let me just say this. And here's our problem. We don't know our history. And I don't care how passionate we get, there's a true history. My great-great-grandfather came to this country in the belly of the slave ship. He died as a successful entrepreneur living in Texas, starting the first black school, first black church, and a proud American. My dad came back from World War II, went to Ohio State, got his PhD, successful black American. We have had so much success. And personally, I'm sick and tired of hearing how bad we did it. We had such great giants who played the game right. They competed, and they won. So I'm going to say to you, all those out there complaining, let's man up. Let's man up. It's about a capitalism system, and this system in which these guys are making millions of dollars, it gives them a chance to go after their dreams, to make an impact. The difference is, instead of getting on knees, why don't they go ahead during all season, take those millions of dollars and hire the 83% of black men, young males that are not working. How about if they go out and stop the abortion going into black communities, which 80% of those abortions are black kids? We have a lot of things we can do, but believe me, it's not America. It's Democrats, the party of socialism, secession, slavery, and segregation. And they're right now in our black communities doing exactly the same thing. We have black Americans like the ones that just listened to a few minutes ago, does not understand the difference between socialism and capitalism. Capitalism is the way that we can work our way out, we can show our skills, show what the difference we are, give value, and make the income to go out and make a difference. So, no, the NFL is not using anybody. They're providing a product. It's up to these young men now to use themselves and get out there and make something happen instead of whining about what somebody else is not doing.
You're listening to Washington Watch, and we're talking with Burgess Owens. He's a member of the Super Bowl, Oakland Raiders football championship team. Burgess, it's been a joy and an honor to have you on the program here today. You've got about 20 seconds here. Just one final thought.
Americans, listen to our history, guys. What the other guys do, they hide our history, so we're either ashamed of it or we're angry about it. We have done this together. We're the greatest picture country in the history of mankind because we've done together. Learn our history. Stop apologizing. Stop expecting one. And let's go out and make this country great again.
Burgess Owens, thank you so much. God bless you, sir, and hope to talk with you again. Folks hanging on the phone, sorry we didn't get to your calls. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You can find more information about the Family Research Council at frc.org. That's frc.org. All of these shows are archived there on the program. This is Washington Watch. Have a blessed day. God bless each and every one of you.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.